The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Before we actually get started and get stuck into looking at today's passage, just a quick sort of survey. On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being it's the worst thing ever, and 1 being it's fantastic, I couldn't recommend it enough. How do people feel about organic food? Is it something that they love or hate? So would you be down at a 1, so it's the worst thing ever? Or a 2? How about just a show of hands is fine. 3, you know, neutral, don't feel too strongly one way or the other. 4, you know, it's good, but it's not the greatest thing. 5, okay, so sort of in the middle, it's sort of neutral or it's okay. What about people who are really pro-organic food? Kind of same scale. So 1, worst ever, or 5, they're amazing. You know, really good social conscience, etc. So at a 1, maybe a 2, 3, or a 4, or 5. Oh, that sort of skews a bit more down the other end. There's a study done back in 2012 by Dr. Kendall Erskine. Called Wholesome Food and Wholesome Morals. And the way that this study worked is they got groups of participants, they got 3 groups, and each group was exposed to a collection of photos, either organic food, photos of organic food, or another group was photos of comfort food, or the last group was photos of neutral foods. And the study found that participants who were exposed to organic foods volunteered significantly less time to help a needy stranger, and they judged moral transgression significantly harsher than those who viewed non-organic foods. And they said the results suggested that exposure to organic foods may lead people to affirm their moral identities, which attenuates their desire to be altruistic. What does that mean in layman's terms? Dr. Erskine said in an interview, basically there's something about being exposed to organic food that made people feel better about themselves, and that made them kind of jerks a bit, I guess. So there's nothing actually wrong with people who like organic food. What the study's tapping into is a phenomenon called moral licensing. It's when you do something that kind of increases your self-image, and then it actually sort of gives you advanced permission to sort of act in what might be, you know, an immoral or a not helpful way. So it's the same sort of thing that happens, you know, if you're on a diet and you spend all day kind of just eating salad or being very careful about what you eat, and then you get home and go, I've been good all day, I'm just going to eat a big bowl of ice cream and a huge piece of cake as well. It's that sort of phenomenon. And I see it in myself all the time. Last year I was reading Getting Things Done, David Allen's classic book on productivity, and there's a lot of helpful things in there. You know, I cleared out my in-tray, I organized my files, I got myself a task manager for my computer, but I also got really judgmental about people around me, you know, my friends, my colleagues, my family. I could suddenly see all the inefficiencies that they had going on in their lives. And I wonder what it is that you guys have as well that, you know, kind of gets you on your moral high horse. Because I guess it's one of the dangers that for people who want to actually, I guess, improve themselves and get better at doing life well, it's one of the dangers you face. You know, you attend a conference or maybe read a book on a particular topic, and suddenly you get all enthusiastic about it, you come back to sort of regular day-to-day life, and you suddenly start looking around at people and thinking, they've got that problem that I heard about. Yep, I can see it in their life. And I wonder if we're getting towards the end of this Sermon on the Mount that Jesus is giving, if he knows we're prone to acting in the same way. So we're in the middle of a series of Bible shots on the historical Jesus, where we're looking at what he did and said. We're working our way through his biography written by one of his followers, Matthew, and the last 6 times we've met and looked at this part of the Bible together, we've been working our way through this Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is talking about the kingdom of God and what it means for his audience. Now, his audience as well, it's a mixed audience. He's speaking to his disciples, people who follow him, but there's also a large crowd there who don't yet follow Jesus, but they're kind of chewing over what he has to say. So whether you consider yourself a follower of Jesus or not, he's actually presenting this way of life and this way that the kingdom of God impacts you and holding it up for your consideration. And we've seen there's been lots of, I guess, moral instruction, lots of instruction and teaching about what it looks like to do life well. And so today we've come to thinking about others. And this is a bit of a challenging section. I don't know if you noticed when Al read through it. I mean, it's challenging because it's personally challenging. But when Al read through it, it seemed kind of like a grab bag of just a whole lot of different sayings. Usually if we're kind of trying to make an argument, you can follow the logic flow. You see this leads to this and leads to this. But as we're reading through it, it kind of seems a little bit, I don't know, sort of disjointed. It starts off with do not judge or you too will be judged. And that seems straightforward enough. But just to go, well, is that a blanket ban on judging? And, you know, what's going on there? Or why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye? Pay attention to the plank in your own eye. What's sawdust? What's a plank? Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you'll find. Knock and the door will be open. You know, what are we supposed to ask or seek? What are we supposed to knock on? And then there's that bit about pigs and dogs, and that's just weird. There's good stuff in here. I mean, it has the golden rule, that do unto others as you'd have them do to you. It's one of those famous verses in the Bible that even if you've never opened a Bible before, you quite possibly could have heard of. You've got a better chance of having heard of that. And so it kind of raises this question, what's going on? What's Jesus talking about? So I think as we come to this passage today, we need to kind of pan back a little bit and actually think about the context. So we've been working through the Sermon on the Mount. We've been hearing what Jesus has to say about a whole lot of different topics, about anger, about honesty, about forgiveness, about charity, about treasure and possessions, and about worry. Like, it's easy to say that, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, texts on sort of practical ethics sort of in human history. And just like when you've been reading a book on self-improvement or going to sort of a seminar on how to do life better, or, you know, looking at photos of organic food, it's easy for people who've been listening to Jesus to end up on their moral high horse. Just a few weeks ago, we looked at treasure and possessions, and as I've been looking at this passage this week, I was struck by just how easy it was for me to be walking around the city, sort of leaving the building, going home, and thinking, oh, all these people who are just obsessed with storing up treasure on earth, and just start judging them. I mean, it's a problem for everyone, but I wonder if it's particularly a problem for those of us who are respectable, I guess. You know, we have reasonable jobs, we have an all right home, maybe a nice family. We can manage to kind of make it look like we're doing life okay. It's easy to look at this ethical instruction and then look at other people and go, they're falling short, yep, they're not doing it. That's exactly what Jesus was talking about right there. It's easy and it makes us feel, you know, better about ourselves because we can think, yeah, I can see it all. I'm on your side, Jesus. You've got it right there. But one of these, this final command that Jesus has in this sort of series of ethical instructions, it's for the people who are listening to him to not judge. I think when we're chewing over these words, you know, do not judge, he's not saying judgment is always bad. In fact, next week we're going to hear him say it's really important that you judge and make some serious judgments about people as well. I don't think he's saying all judgment is bad. I think he's saying don't have a judgmental attitude towards others about what you've been hearing. Way back at the start of the Sermon on the Mount, so this is several weeks ago now, Jesus was telling the people who he was talking to, you need to have the right attitude. I don't know if you remember, he said a few things like, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Jesus started his talk by saying, if you want to live the blessed life, the good life, it's all about having the right attitude. The right attitude was key. And when you think about it, having a judgmental attitude, it's the opposite of these. It's the opposite of being poor in spirit or someone who recognizes they're in a helpless situation and really needs someone else to help them. Actually, it's the attitude of someone who's proud and thinks they can do it all by themselves. It's the opposite of someone who's mourning their own wrongdoing. Instead, it's someone who's tearing down others. The judgmental attitude, it shows that, you know, they're not being merciful. They don't realize how much they themselves have needed mercy. I reckon Jesus wants his audience to remember the way that they actually relate to others shows what your attitude is really like. So Jesus says, don't judge, and he gives us a reason for it. He says, don't judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way as you judge others, you too will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. And we still have that question, well, I mean, who will judge? What exactly is Jesus talking about? I mean, it could be that, you know, if you're really judgmental in the office, then people who are also in the office might be more judgmental towards you. But I'm not sure that's the main thing Jesus is getting at. You know, you could not be judgmental and others will still be judgmental. So I wonder if it's something else that's going on. I think the answer has to be God. It's about God and his judgment. Because if we're thinking the whole talk perspective, the whole Sermon on the Mount perspective, we need to remember what Jesus said again back at the start, back in chapter 5, 17. He said, do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to them to abolish them, but to fulfill them. And now in today's passage at the end, he said in verse 12, so in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. And so at the start and at the finish, Jesus has kind of flagged that he's talking about the law and the prophets. And one of the big ideas in the law and the prophets is that it is God who is the judge. They're the lenses that Jesus wants us to use, the law and the prophets, and in those, God is the judge. And that's actually a really scary thought, because if you've been listening to what Jesus says, has been saying over the last few weeks, on the one hand, I mean, yes, there is something really encouraging and inspiring about his ethical instruction. You can look at it and say, yeah, that's actually good stuff for life. But on the other hand, if I hold that teaching up to myself, I'm always going to come up short. I mean, not just because I'm 5'6", but because actually there's a problem inside me. And actually, it's the same for every one of us. We can never attain the standard that Jesus is talking about because there's a problem inside us. And I reckon that's what he's trying to clue us into there in verse 3. He says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. A guy I know told a story once about when he was out fishing once, and he ended up with a fish hook caught in his eyelid. So he had to go off to the emergency room, and you know, he was okay, they managed to get it out. But he was thinking, if you were in that sort of situation where somehow you've ended up with a fish hook in your eye, that's going to be a delicate procedure to remove. Would you want someone like this coming up and saying, oh, don't worry, buddy, I've got it. I can get that thing right out there. It's ridiculous. You do not want someone like this with this huge problem coming to try and do a delicate operation. It's not going to work. But Jesus wants his audience to remember they are the ones with the plank in their eye. And we've been listening to what Jesus has to say over the last few weeks. When you hear sort of ethical and moral instruction, it's easy to look at others and see, oh yeah, that's where that guy's falling short, that's where that guy's falling short. But if that's what you're doing, Jesus says, no, you've missed the point. Jesus wants his audience to realize actually all of us need help. Maybe you'd say it's moral weakness, or maybe you'd say it's human frailty, but Jesus has been pushing us to see that our problem is what the Bible calls sin. And then as far as the Bible's concerned, well, the only one who can fix that is God. If God's the only one who can fix it, there's really only one thing you can do. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. It's like if you were in the surf in summer and you suddenly find yourself in trouble, you find yourself drowning, you need to throw your hand up so the surf lifesavers know you need help, you need rescuing. But it kind of causes a bit of a problem for us, doesn't it? Because we've seen that God is the judge. But he's the only one who can show us mercy. And so if I want to go to God, it raises that question. What will I get? Will I get mercy or will I get judgment? And so Jesus, he pushes us to see that we can trust we'll have mercy from God if we go to him based on God's character. He says, which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? When you think about it, those images are quite shocking. I mean, who, if their son asked them for bread, would give them a stone? Or if they asked for a nice fish dinner, would actually throw a live snake in front of them? It's monstrous. But given that all that we've been seeing about our shortcomings, Jesus says, you know, even if you guys who just actually keep falling short, even you guys who are evil, if you can recognize how wrong this scenario is, how much more will God actually give you good gifts, give you good things? You need God's mercy, and he will give it to you. And I think that's the key, actually, to having the right attitude and how you think about others. It's the key not to judging people. But actually, Jesus pushes his audience not just to not judge, but to go well beyond that. In verse 12 there, he says, so in everything, do to others what you'd have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Jesus wants his audience to take how they think of others seriously, and he wants them to relate to them seriously, so seriously that he gets them to think about it from the other position. I mean, what would you like people to do for you when you go back to your office after lunch? You know, would it be nice for them to have put a nice cup of coffee on your desk or have some cake there? What about more seriously? Would you like them to have your interests at hand when you interact with them? To be generous with you when you've made mistakes or haven't quite been able to make that deadline? To be patient with you, with your foibles and annoying habits. Jesus wants his disciples, his followers, to actually treat others the way that they themselves want to be treated. See, we started with a command from Jesus to not judge, and he's shown us how actually behind that sits your relationship with God. And I think he wants us to see the way that you relate to others, it's based on your relationship with God. Firstly, because it's a matter of life and death, which is what I think he gets at in verses 13 and 14 about that broad and narrow way. But because our relationship with God, that's where we need mercy again and again and again. And Jesus wants us to see, actually, we can keep going back to him for mercy again and again and again. We have security in that. And so Jesus' followers don't need to be judgmental. They can love others because of what God has done for them. It doesn't make sense for us to be judgmental because God has shown us so much mercy. Yeah, Rod.
Did you skip the pigs and the dogs?
Oh, you noticed that, did you? You noticed that. Yes, I did skip through it just in the run-through. So what's going on with verse 6? Because it is a bit weird. It stands out, and you sort of go, what's going on there? Short answer, I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know, let me give you a couple of thoughts. Do not give to dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. The first thing we need to remember is, you know, the dogs and the pigs Jesus is thinking about. We think of dogs and pigs, we might think of, you know, dogs and pigs. But back in Jesus' day around Palestine, you're probably better to think of dogs and pigs. Not, you know, nice, cute, cuddly pets, but, you know, vicious animals that are really not clean. And so that's one of the things. These are kind of, you know, vicious animals there. And I wonder, there's a couple of things that could be going on. In the flow of what Jesus has been saying, I wonder if there's a sense in which he's kind of been saying, you know, don't have that judgmental attitude. The first thing you need to do is have that plank removed. You actually need your sin dealt with. But even if you are kind of coming at someone with, a loving critique, sometimes people aren't going to be in a position to hear it. You know, you might sort of think of, you know, I've got that colleague at work who's, you know, always just really angry and snaps at people just at the drop of a hat. I think you could feasibly be going, oh, look, it would be really helpful to actually correct him, not because I want to tear him down, but actually I want to try and help him. I wonder if part of it is going, you know, even when you're coming at it from a right place, sometimes people aren't just going to be in a place to hear it. They're just going to tear you down and reject it. I think as Christians then have continued to reflect on the verse sort of over the millennia since Jesus, there's this question of even presenting the gospel to people and going, sometimes people just are going to keep rejecting the gospel, and violently so. And so there is actually sometimes a call for wisdom to go, you know, actually telling this person about Jesus and the salvation that they have in him at this moment maybe isn't the wisest thing. Doesn't mean, you know, it's a cop-out for, you know, going, oh, great, I don't have to do it because Jesus has here in this proverb, I don't need to. It's still a call for Christians to keep sharing the hope that we have, but that sometimes it may not be the wisest course of action. So there's a couple of thoughts on what's going on in verse 6. Any further questions or pushback?
I was curious about judgment's always going to be there, how you deal with it.
Sorry, the...
Judgment's always going to be there, right?
Judgment's always going to be there. Yeah, yeah. And so how do you actually then make good judgments? Because we actually have to keep making judgments. You know, is there a particular example that you're thinking of? Or
I was thinking quite broadly, but it could be good judgments, like you said, like a good critique.
Mm.
Which can be taken positively. It could be gossip that's going around, which may be negative, mm-hmm. positive. But how would you can't judge the judgment.
Mm. So how do you work out, is this a judgment that I should give or shouldn't give? I guess at one level, I wonder if some of it's actually doing some reflecting yourself. So, I don't know, a good rule of thumb is a good rule of thumb would be you can always say something later that you haven't said, but it's very hard to take back something that you have said. So if you're umming and ahhing, maybe sit on it is a helpful rule of thumb. Thinking about what your own motives are in wanting to say it, and recognising what some of the fallout could be helpful guides if you are going to actually speak into a situation. It might depend on also what your role and responsibility is. You know, if you're someone's manager, part of your job is to give them that feedback and to give them tough feedback sometimes as well. But that's kind of coming from a different attitude as someone who's a peer and who's just grumpy because, you know, maybe someone is a bit further ahead of you than you'd like, or you can sort of go, oh, look at that problem that's there. But I think the focus that Jesus is actually saying here is actually, you know, when you've been spending time thinking about, well, what does the life he's putting forward as, you know, the life of one of Jesus' disciples look like, don't kind of hold up that list of things and that description of what it looks like. Don't hold it up to other people and go, you know, she's falling short in these areas and, oh, he's doing a terrible job over here. He's saying, actually, you need to look at yourself and recognise where you're falling short, and it should turn you back to God to say, I'm sorry and I need forgiveness. It's not a list of instruction to be able to judge others. That's misusing Jesus' teaching. He's saying, actually, yep, keep trying to live it out, but don't use it as a tool for judging. Use it as a tool for reflecting and seeing, actually, I still need God's mercy. I need to keep turning back to him and asking for forgiveness. Yeah.
Sometimes think as in, how would I feel if somebody said that to me?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you'll just change the way you say it, not necessarily not pass the job or share how you feel, but just if they said that to me, how would I feel?
Yeah, and that taps into, I guess, what Jesus is saying in verse 12 is actually, how would you, if someone was wanting to give you, needed to give you feedback because you're angry, how would you want them to do that? Would you want them to be yelling at you in the middle of the floor with all your colleagues around? Or, you know, actually would a quiet word aside, you know, where it's not embarrassing, is that going to be a better way to do it? You know, what's actually going to be helpful and loving? Hmm.
I have time for one more.
Yeah, Deb.
Say making a decision about what maybe whether to join a particular, I don't know, a company, for example, but it's a judgment that we have to make without judging in a condemnatory sense.
choosing between two options. So as in, you mean like...
You make a judgment based on
Yeah, okay.
So if one party isn't acting
according to principles. Sure, so if you're thinking kind of as... In a particular context of followers of Jesus, so maybe you've got to decide what church am I going to go to or something like that. Is that sort of the thing?
So you make the,
yeah. It's not a don't make decisions. I think the emphasis is actually on how are you using this stuff to kind of tear people down. Next week, like I said, the very next verse in the next section, Jesus says... verse 15, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ferocious wolves. By their fruit, you will recognize them. So implied there is a judgment about people. And it's not saying judgment is never appropriate. He's saying, given all this instruction that I've given you, don't just use it to tear others down and make yourself feel good. Actually, you need to reflect on where you're at and see your own brokenness and sinfulness and turn back to God. There is appropriate time to be making judgments and sometimes about people, but be careful that it's not, that you're not doing it as a, look how much better I am than them. I think that's the difference in emphasis there. Yeah. It's not that all judgments anytime are out.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.